next case on the calendar is 97-1261-97-1488, Valerie Cater versus City of Cleveland. Justice Cook has recused herself in this case, and we're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Cook. Judge Ronald Hadley, who is the judge of the Court of Appeals, sitting in the 3rd District. Welcome back, Judge Hadley. Mr. Winston.
Good morning. Chief Justice, may I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal? This is what you're doing. We are here because a 12-year-old boy is dead at the hands of the City of Cleveland in an indoor swimming pool. We are here because Athena died in 2 other appellate districts in his state. First of all, you would probably, if he had died in one of those districts, this case would have continued its conclusion at trial, and the jury could have given the family the remedy that they are still entitled to. What happened in this case was inexcusable and outrageous conduct on the part of the City of Cleveland. The managing lifeguard had removed herself and one other lifeguard from the pool during the first day of the summer swim season, leaving twice as many kids in the pool, almost 100 kids, that the 2 remaining lifeguards could properly supervise. She knew at the time that there were problems, known problems, with glare in the pool. She knew that she left in the high chair a 17-year-old lifeguard who literally was on the job for only a matter of 3 hours, who sat for 40 minutes staring at a glare spot until some children found Daryl Cater at the bottom of the pool, but didn't stop there. 3 City of Cleveland employees tried repeatedly to reach 911, but none had been trained on how to use the phone and make an emergency call. And as a result, there was up to a half an hour delay between the drowning and the time the ambulances arrived. We are here because the Court of Appeals in the 8th District improperly applied the law in 2744, which they misapplied for 3 reasons. Number 1, they violated the plain terms of the statute. Number 2, they violated the legislative intent behind the statute. And number 3, they violated the public policy underlying the statute. 2744 is sovereign immunity. It was enacted in 1985. At the time, there was no more sovereign immunity. This court had abolished it judicially in the state of Ohio. It is therefore to be construed narrowly. It is to be construed in favor of finding liabilities in derogation of common law. Immunity is the exception, liability is the rule. If you believe the Court of Appeals in the 8th District, there would be absolute 100% liability all the time, no matter what, for any death that occurs in an indoor pool or an indoor rec center. It ignores the plain language of the statute. There are at least 2, if not 3, exceptions to immunity which apply in this case. The first exception is, let me back up if I may. The City of Cleveland's position is that in 1987, the General Assembly changed swimming pools and other recreational facilities to governmental functions. Before that, they had been defined as proprietary functions. That was the only change made to the law. The law involves a 3-step analysis, and I have before the court a visual aid to show exactly what that is. The first step is simply, is it defined as a governmental function? It is. That section does not impose liability. That exception, that provision does not impose immunity. It simply contains definitions. We then move to the second section, which sets forth the immunities and likewise the exceptions. Our General Assembly knew when it was enacting the statute that it had existing statutory framework to work for. If they wanted to create absolute immunity, they could have done that. They could have said that swimming pools are absolutely immune from liability. They did not do that. They left intact the B3 and B4 exceptions, both of which apply to the facts of this case. We have a nuisance on a public ground because of this known glare spot, and no policy by the city whatsoever on how to manage that glare spot, and no policy whatsoever on how to train lifeguards like that rookie sitting in the high chair looking at that glare spot for 40 minutes. And in fact, in this particular pool, there was a low lifeguard chair 5 feet away.
Did the glare spot, did it move at all?
Your Honor, the testimony was within 40 minutes that the lifeguard sat in the high chair for the entire time that glare spot covered the area where Daryl Gable was found.
Because the sun, wasn't it caused by the sun coming through a glass that had been erected, the glass wall or...
Your Honor, it was due to two reasons. Artificial lighting as well as natural lighting. This particular pool had a wall of lights or of glass on this side that then led to glare over here in combination with the artificial lighting. So it was a combination of both a natural and unnatural condition. But the city acknowledged it. The aquatics manager for all the pools knew about it. The rec manager for this particular pool knew about it. And all the lifeguards who worked there must have known about it, because this guard was in the high chair looking down at this glare spot the entire time.
I don't know. I think of this little thing of being a nuisance. What definition of nuisance are you using to try to comfort? You usually think of the chicken park that puts out knocking doors, you don't get glare spots.
Nuisance justice is any condition that exists that creates an unreasonable risk of harm, number one. And number two, a municipality has to know about that condition or have notice of it. Here we have actual knowledge of that condition. Here it's no different than the highway cases where this court has repeatedly held that there's an obligation on the part of the municipality to make sure that roads and highways and sidewalks remain free from nuisance. It's no different than
your nuisance theory has the glare spot in and of itself doesn't create harm. It's the fact that you can't see through it. You're kind of having a little hard time understanding how the glare spot can create an unreasonable risk of harm.
It's no different, Your Honor, than if the city allowed a tree to go over a stop sign. They had knowledge of that and they knew as a result of that, that stop sign was blocked and motorists could therefore go through that and cause accidents. That hinders visibility the same way as in this particular case where the lifeguards could not see that area of the pool.
Well, I thought the lifeguard in the chair, wasn't the problem was the lifeguard who was supposed to be in the chair was out having lunch, wasn't that?
That's exactly right.
Or whatever. And I thought the evidence is that the lifeguard had been in the chair. He could see. I mean, obviously you're going to have spots on water in a lighted pool that may be difficult to see. So it seems to me the way you get around that, which is what I thought the city did, was to provide there to be a lifeguard on a high seat and a lifeguard on a low seat.
That's
and
exactly
the lifeguard
right.
on the low seat wasn't there.
That's exactly right.
Is that the city's fault? Or you didn't join the individuals, I guess.
That's correct. We did.
It seems as if the individuals here, really, they didn't carry out, they didn't do what they're supposed to do, and now the city becomes liable, even though the city had, it seems to me, provided for, at least for that nuisance situation.
Well, the city did not provide, Your Honor, any policies in terms of managing that nuisance or any training regarding that. But in terms of the negligence of the employees, that falls under the B4 exception. B4 specifically provides that if there is negligence in a building used for a governmental function, it is not immune. In this case, the legislature defined a pool as a governmental function, which falls plainly within the statute.
Did the city contact the persons responsible for the building of that pool and see if they could alleviate this condition that you said was prevalent and they had knowledge of?
There was no evidence developed, Your Honor, Justice Sweeney, in terms of whether or not they made any corrective measures outside of what Justice Moyer said in placing the chair.
And you said that they were on notice of the problem that existed?
The evidence of trial by both the aquatics managers in charge of all the pools, the rec manager in charge of this pool, and the lifeguards at this pool was this nuisance was a problem.
Did they all recognize that this was causing a problem that
absolutely.
That a lifeguard could not see to the
absolutely.
Bottom of the pool?
Which is why they had a chair there that should have been occupied by two lifeguards that had left to go on a lunch break. In fact, the managing lifeguard for the city was 10 days away from delivering a baby.
And putting a chair there was their answer to curing the problem?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Is that a problem with negligence of the building? You have pool, you have light, you have inevitably glare spots. How is the failure of someone to be sitting in a chair when they should be sitting in a chair in a building grounds from under B?
It's not, Your Honor. that moves into the report, which is negligence by an employee in connection or in a building used for governmental function.
Yes, do you envision any scenario in which swimming pools, something happens to swimming pool and the city is immune and the statute seems to apply?
Yes, Your Honor.
When do you think that would happen?
Going through the statutory framework, we get to the third part, which reinstates immunity for discretionary decisions. That was a distinction made in common law. High-level policy decisions are going to be immunized unless they are exercised recklessly or wantonly. So, for example, in this case, the decision on how many lifeguards should be in the pool at the time of this open swim session is immunized unless, as we did here, we should show recklessness. And we can show it here because the lifeguard disregarded a known risk. She knew that the city regulations required one lifeguard per 25 children. She knew there was a rookie in the high chair. She knew there was no one left in the low chair, and she disregarded that risk to go in the lobby. Therefore, there's at least a question of fact that the jury can decide recklessness.
Can you only get to defenses if you establish an exception?
Your Honor, that is a position that I know you have taken. The question is, can this be a sword or can this be a shield? For the city of Cleveland's position, if there's absolute immunity, we know the legislative intent here was to only offer partial immunity. The emergency clause of the statute says, and it's at the bottom of the visual aid, immunized to an extent. Now, if this court is going to try to rewrite the statute as they're suggesting that we must do because of this legislative intent, the question is which of these three exceptions applies, B3, B4, or A5. A5 itself, Your Honor, the express terms say immunized unless. So it sets forth an exception there for reckless conduct, particularly if B3 or B4 would not apply. The whole reason for the sovereign immunity statute is to immunize governments when they're doing governmental things.
Is it fair to say that you first of all have to prove negligence, forgetting willful and wanton? You have to prove negligence, and secondly, under this statute, the existing statute, you have to prove there's no immunity of any sort under any of the exceptions.
Under the 03 exceptions, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Then that would make, if either of those is not so, if there's no negligence, then your case is over. But if there is negligence and there is immunity, that would make the sovereign, if that's what we're going to call it, different than every other person who commits a negligent act towards another.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Where does sovereign immunity come from?
Well, the members of this court have questioned whether there's any constitutional authority to even begin with to enact sovereign immunity. Certainly the right to sue a city existed prior to the Constitution in 1851. There is no rational basis as to why you would distinguish between...
But sovereign immunity came from the king could do no wrong, exactly. In England. Is the city of Cleveland king?
Not at all.
I didn't think we had any kings in this country.
We did not.
And I guess if we decide there's no sovereign immunity, the city can easily decide there are no public swimming pools. That's an easy decision for them, I guess, isn't it?
Your Honor, better that the city have no swimming pools or have fewer swimming pools, or better yet, if there's no liability to begin with to do the job right. If you have properly trained lifeguards, if they're doing their jobs, if the city should be held to the same standard as private citizens. What we're saying is there's some sort of governmental incompetency that's built into the system. By having sovereign immunity, we create no incentive on the part of the city to rectify the problem. This was not the first drowning. This is not the second drowning, and this will not be the last drowning unless this court applies the plain language of the statute, or if it cannot apply those plain terms, then question the constitutional basis to begin with for even enacting the statute. Justice Trapp, getting back to the A5 section, can that be a shield or a sword? What about the situation where there is a reckless act in the use of personnel? That falls out of the definition of negligence. You can't have negligence and recklessness. There may be a question of fact as to which one it is, but if you have recklessness, if you can't fall within B4, is the claimant then barred from remedy? Because even though there's a clear, expressed intent to have reckless conduct be actionable, We want to protect governments in doing governmental functions. There should be sovereign immunity when a sovereign acts as a sovereign, when it decides how many swimming pools we want to open, when it decides how many fire trucks we want to purchase. But once it makes that decision, the implementation of that decision, such as with an airport wanting to expand, once they make that decision, they should be held accountable like everybody else.
Sounds a little good. I'm part of the 8th District here, the 8th District Court of Appeals, that handles your case. The 8th District, under their interpretation, you said you're giving different interpretations of various courts of appeals. Under their interpretation, under what circumstance could a ground in a municipal or public pool ever involve any potential liability for the public entity operating that pool?
It could never.
Total immunity. That was my understanding.
That's correct. Right.
So then what is to require any outcome? What would cause this city to have any liability?
Exactly.
Or a fence around the pool?
Exactly. There's no incentive whatsoever because we can kill the community. Oh well, it happens. There's no incentive for the city to correct physical defects that exist or to take corrective action concerning the staffing of their pool.
Is there anything that you can find to exactly the intent of the general assembly?
Do just the opposite. And if I could just briefly walk through the statutory analysis, the flaw in the 8th and the Court of Appeals analysis is they are looking at the emergency clause, not the statute itself, not the four corners of the statute containing this dotted line, but they're looking at the emergency clause, which is uncodified law. And they're saying, we're going to take that, and we're going to read into that an intent to immunize pools, and we're going to let that override the express terms of the statute. That is contrary to every basic principle of statutory interpretation.
Your argument is that all they meant to do is to give pools the same immunity that other governmental functions.
That's exactly right. Within the existing statutory framework.
Because it had been proprietary function.
Had been proprietary. Now it's governmental function. And that's the first step of the analysis.
So prior to having under the old case law, the pools were at least not an immune activity.
Not at all. The ministerial carrying out of lifeguarding and taking care of pools was action. And even under Engerhauser, where the courts will immunize high-level policy decisions, the conduct in this particular case would likewise be action. The problem is, you can't go outside the four corners of the statute to try to rewrite it. And once this court tries to do that, the question is, what did the legislature intend? And we can't do that when the terms of the statute are plain. The statute is to be applied as written. And even if it does, the emergency clause does show some intent, what it shows is intent for partial immunity, only to an extent. I see that my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Loughlin. Trial judge are of this state. What are the circumstances, if any, under which a drowning in a municipal or public pool could be actionable, if any?
Well, I think there are instances where it could be actionable if there was a defect in the pool, in the pool itself.
So if the lifeguards...
That would be a legitimate nuisance.
Okay.
Within a pool. It doesn't have anything to do with the lifeguard at this point, though. I'm not speaking to the lifeguard.
If the lifeguards all show up drunk, the child drowns, no cause of action.
Conceivably, there would not be. But let's talk. I can see. You see, we can get into all kinds of real problems with this.
Is it your position that there is absolute blanket immunity?
There is, but let me tell you why.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what we're talking about. You've got to go to the statutory history. I think there's two things involved, okay, that we're going to talk about. One is the question you certified of the conflict between courts and fields, the type of thing you're speaking to the other. And I gather the constitutionality of the whole shooting match is something you'd like to look at for a minute. With those two factors in mind, remember, the legislative history of this thing came up following your courts have back decisions and so forth that wiped out the common law sovereign immunity that accepted might be left over in England. I'm not sure just what all that would be. But let's say common law immunity is gone. And so you're into statutory immunity. You've got the first statutory immunity to the state itself in 75, if you remember, coming down in the Court of Claims Act. So that took care of the state, but the state exempted its subdivisions. And so the common law immunity that was protecting the subdivisions went forward from 75 until 82. After you had a complete abdication of sovereign immunity, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the details, but you had a rather chaotic decision that was operating in municipal community. For example, and I was a party to this, unfortunately, it was levying on city bank accounts. They couldn't make paydays and so forth. The whole chaotic mess brought the legislature back into the game again. And they enacted then Chapter 2744, which it gave a different form of immunity. It gave the state's immunity now to some of its subdivisions. Not common law immunity anymore. So you're into the statute. And at the time the statute was enacted, the operation of the swimming pool was made a proprietary function. And the city was liable, as it would for any proprietary operation. That went on for 2 years, and the problems became so great in the eyes of the city people that they started closing the pools and all that sort of thing.
Really?
Yes. And here, then you had the amendment.
You know, I have a hard time understanding that.
Well, let me tell you, stay with me, Judge, just a little bit.
Let me ask you that. I mean, the fools were never immune.
He was there.
And now suddenly, there was no point, if I understand the track, up until the point in time when you say there was a crisis in which there was any immunity. There wasn't pre-Haverlack. There wasn't post-Haverlack. And there wasn't post the statute. The same exposure was constant throughout that period. Nothing changed with respect to swimming pools. Correct?
That's right. It was considered proprietary by the courts.
All along. Nothing the legislature or the court did changed the status of pools.
It was wiping out, Your Honor, of the sovereign immunity in its total that started to bring about the crisis that developed. And included. Let me read what the General Assembly said.
I was there.
Okay.
I remember the argument. It was that they couldn't play ball.
Well, let me refresh exactly what the legislation said.
I wasn't there. I didn't hear it. Tell me about it.
The emergency clause was section 3 of the House Bill 295, which was the amending 87 Act. And they said this, the reasons for the necessity, and that's the emergency and so forth, are that under the political subdivision sovereign immunity law, political subdivisions are potentially civilly liable in damage for injury and death, or injury or death or loss to person or property that is negligently caused by any of their employees in connection with the operation of parks, playgrounds, playfields, and other recreational facilities, and that due to the unavailability of affordable liability insurance of political subdivisions, unless the operation of parks, playgrounds, playfields, other recreational facilities is immediately categorized as a governmental function and immunized to an extent from potential civil liability under the political subdivision sovereign immunity law, political subdivisions may have to cease the operation of recreational sites. Now that's what the legislature found from this.
I didn't hear the word swimming pool.
It's a recreational facility.
Okay.
So you got this basis for this amendment. It moved it back into a governmental function. Now part of this problem came out of that hasn't been discussed, that you got to understand in order to have the whole picture here. And if the purpose was to make it immune from the negligence of employees, that could only be achieved by going to the governmental status. If you look at the other governmental immunity provisions that there are in 27 to 44.01, you will find that most of them, I think all of them, other than this one, but I would suggest you look yourself, because I think they go from, what's it, from A through D or Z or something like that, become irreconcilable. In other words, you can't be liable under D4 for the negligence of your employees and immunized under 27-44-01-2-CU. It's got to be one or the other. You can't be going both ways. And so that's where you get this total immunity package that sits with operation of the pool. But now to answer your question a step further, Justice Feinberg, is there an instance where D4 could apply? Sure. The instance could be if the negligence of the employee causes a defect that makes the particular place unsafe for the operation of the normal home. In other words, he takes a piece of tile out to repair it and then walks away and leaves the darn thing, and somebody falls into it and injures himself badly.
That's an exception.
That would be the type of thing that might be arguably lead to negligence. But not the negligence of the employee in and of itself, the fact that be a defect in the premise.
So if you don't change the filters and you have murky water or on-site water, you don't chlorinate it or any of those things, total immunity.
If you fill up a chamber of words like that, the answer is yes.
Well, then, what are the words to an extent? What effect should be given to that in this phrase that you referred to? There to be immunized to an extent.
Well, to the extent, then you've got to look at the whole act. I'll never get to the governmental, but I want to, this is the short part, because what you're certifying. You look at the way the Sovereign Immunity Act, 2744, is put together. It grants in 01 an immunity, okay, for governmental functions.
Well, 01 is just a definition.
Yes, that's what comes out of it. It substantially sets up the governmental function, defines what governmental function is. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're... Then it provides, in the next section, exceptions to governmental immunity. 5 exceptions to governmental immunity. And proclaim to come in and prove, hey, this is a governmental function, but I'm under one of these exceptions. Then the third thing considered play under the statute. The municipality is then given certain defenses to these exceptions, which if he can prove, still can protect him. If he can't, he loses, or he loses. So that's the format.
And are those things jury questions?
Not necessarily. No. They become questions of law because you're coming back to whether or not you're talking about sovereign immunity being in effect, and that's a legal question. The facts that come to these others, Your Honor, that you're talking to about, that you have to prove to establish, could be jury questions conceivably under one set of circumstances. But when you're talking about the first question you ask here, in every one of these cases, is the city immune under governmental immunity? That's not a jury question.
So I continue to wonder, most municipalities and public agencies as home schools still carry liability insurance?
Yeah, I can't give no authority on that. I think a great number of them do, a great number of them do not. For example, the city of Cleveland is uninsured. It's a self-insured operation.
Yes, but it is general uninsured. It doesn't carry liability insurance.
Yes, because of cost.
Right.
That's right.
But smaller places that don't have the capacity to spread the risk that Cleveland does, they do carry insurance.
Oh, certainly. They do it. That's what the insurance pool is set up, and there are a number of the places covered by insurance. But they
why would you do that if you're immune?
The immunity provision, as a general insurance, I don't know of any municipality that simply goes out and insures a swimming pool from which it is immune. It buys a liability of the type of insurance that covers it in all instances of its operations. Proprietary, and the defense, the insurance companies have the defense of governmental immunity. When they defend, then they come in and make the defense. And they can establish if they don't pay. Now, I do not, let's talk, we'll never get to the constitutional thing here, let's talk about the statute. First, look at the fact, the city of Cleveland isn't here, so I'm stuck with presenting their position, but I do call your attention to the fact that the city didn't do anything wrong in this case. They didn't, the only bad feature in this is the sun, and God didn't shut it off with her. But aside from the sun, there's nothing wrong here. The right guys were properly trained.
That's what I was going to ask you about. The fact that the four lifeguards were not doing that has nothing to do with the city?
No, that's the negligence of the employees. The city had a perfectly safe pool. It trained its lifeguards. It had the end up properly. They were all Red Cross. It had, in effect, a group of regulations, which plaintiff's own experts said if the employees had followed, there wouldn't have been any problem.
But no, when you say it's negligence of the employees, under the statute, I think one thing is certain, and that is that to avoid suing employees and the agency, you sue only the public body and the employee.
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
Well, unless they're outside the scope of their employment.
Well, and this is, remember what they're arguing here. He's arguing willful wanton.
Which would take them outside.
I think it would, but.
But as long as they're inside the scope of their employment, their negligence is imputed to the public agency, and you can only sue the public agency.
No, you put the part disagreeing, Your Honor, because it's not limited. You can only sue the public agency. Normally, a plaintiff in a case like this, not
I thought as long as the employee was within their scope of, if they weren't wanton and willful and within the scope of employment, they had the right to be dismissed out, didn't even have to defend.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. No, I believe the problem here is that the employees should have been joined. And if they were joined, then you'd have the possibility of the judgment against the employees and then a request by the employees for reimbursement under another provision that is before the court here.
Mr. O'Loughlin, before you leave us, I'd really like to get back to what this case is about, because we've had a certified question to us. And the certified question is whether or not the absolute immunity under C2U, under 2744, is still subject to the exceptions in immunity under B3 and 4. Is it your position that once the immunity is absolute, that there are no exceptions to it, and therefore O2, B3, and 4 do not apply?
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay. So that if we found that O2, B3, and 4 did apply, would they carve an exception to the absolute immunity by their very verbiage?
My answer to that, Your Honor, is no.
Okay. That's all I need to know. So you want us very clearly to answer the certified question, no.
That's right. It's because of the way in which these amendments occurred and because of the irreconcilability between the two sections and sections 151 and 152 of the code, which tell you how to apply a law when you have this irreconcilability. And you get the special controls over the general, and the later in point of time controls over the earlier. And that leads you to the absolute immunity that's been created here. Now, if the legislature says that this absolute, the thing that bothers Justice Fikers so much is that absolute immunity is bad, then you change the law. That's policy. But that's the way it came down, and that's the way the case is in front of you right now. And the other issue, I see, as usual, I'm in trouble.
Finish your thought quickly.
We have not touched the constitutionality of this whole business. If I could have the lead to just talk about it.
Well, not on the Constitution, you can't do that in 15 seconds.
No. Well, I can't to this extent, Your Honor. I'm down, sit down. Please, I can't. You're talking about immunity here. I want the court to remember that you're talking about the state sovereign immunity. And if 2744 is no good, 2743 is no good, the state's immunity is no good. A Pandora's box has been opened here. Judicial immunity, why? Legislative immunity, why? And that will lead them to a complete discussion with your
Well, except the easy answer to that is because at common law, you had the right of trial by jury to sue a municipality. There was not sovereign immunity. And judges and legislators have always, by the Constitution and all the way back to the Northwest Territory Ordinance, been immune for the deliberations they take during their procedural sessions.
That's if you're going to protect them by common law. But I'm saying this is not common law. The questions you have to ask yourself when you get off the notes. Well, I might disagree somewhat with the approach, the court took the second item. Is you have to ask two questions first. Sovereignty, what is it? Secondly, who has it under the American form of government? And the answer is the people. It's the reserve clause in the federal constitution that gives back power to the states. It's the same power that you're talking about. It's entirely different. I don't think it's common law.
Thank you, Mr. Laughlin. Mr. Linton, you've used your time, but it may take a minute.
If I could just raise 2 points. In terms of statutory interpretation, there is no absolute immunity conferred by the first part of that statute. That is just a definition section. You cannot take legislative intent and allow that to override the express terms of the statute. And that's what the Court of Appeals did here, and that was incorrect. Number two, the reason why we have this law, it was enacted in 1987, the amendment, changing this to a governmental function. That was the same time Justice Pfeiffer, when they had tort reform that was enacted. And the stated reason in here, like tort reform, was because there was a so-called claim lack of available and affordable insurance. There was a request to have a hearing on that. There was no evidence of that. In 83, 2 years before sovereign immunity was adopted in the state, Enkhauser, this court held, Number one, there is no insurance crisis. And number two, there is no empirical data that if we abolish immunity, that the governments will go out of business and that they'll close down their parks. This court in Sorrell struck down tort reform on the same basis. There is no empirical data that there ever was an insurance crisis due to innocent victims being killed on municipal property, being killed because of wrongful conduct in the city, and then being going to have their day in court and get their remedy. That was not there. There has been no empirical data. Where before this court is there a single reference to any evidence of a single pool closing down because we hold cities to the same standards as the rest of our citizens? And for that reason, we ask this court to reverse the remand and let the jury decide to seize liability.
Thank you, Liz. The case is submitted. Court will be advised of our opinion. Counsel, excuse. We have an admission ceremony next, so you may leave.
Take care.